At Ability Chiropractic, they do things differently. They believe lasting health starts with understanding how your body truly works, not masking pain with quick fixes. Their doctors take time to educate and empower you to take control of your wellness journey. Through gentle, customized adjustments, they help you restore proper function and unlock your body's natural healing power. That's why Columbus families have trusted Ability Chiropractic since 2012. See the difference for yourself. Book your appointment today at abilitychiro.com.
Thank you for listening to this podcast from TRE, Talk Radio Europe, your voice in Spain and around the world. For more information, please visit tre.radio.
Discuss, challenge, inform, comment, viewpoint on Talk Radio Europe.
Giles Brown.
Live comment and discussion with studio guests. Viewpoint.
Good morning. It is Tuesday, the 24th of June. You're listening to Viewpoint, Talk Radio Europe's current affairs program, with a panel of invited guests where we discuss the issues of the day with you for the next 2 hours. If you want to get involved with the show, then these are the numbers.
To contact TRE, please call 952-78-4000. Email studio at tre.radio. Send us a WhatsApp on +34 645 99 67 95. Message us on Facebook, Talk Radio Europe Official, or tweet us at TRE Talk Radio.
Joined in the studio by Andres Gallardo. Morning, Andres.
Good morning, Giles.
And we're going to be also on the line to Rex Leyland in a few minutes. But first, let's discuss the... let's look at what the papers are saying this morning. Ceasefire agreed with Iran and war games tend to be the main headlines on those. Looking at that, so the main stories. First editions of this morning's papers were published before President Trump's ceasefire announcement, but many of the American news websites have been following developments. President Trump has told NBC that he expects the ceasefire to go forever, saying that he doesn't believe Iran and Israel will ever be shooting at each other ever again. He says he got the job done with a truce, which the New York Times reports even caught some senior members of his own administration by surprise. An official tells the outlet that the U.S. bombings of Iranian nuclear sites at the weekend set the conditions for ceasefire talks. A source on the website Axios says that once Iran had responded with an attack on the American airbase, officials in Tehran notified the White House through Qatar they wouldn't carry out any further strikes. The unnamed insider said the Trump administration then agreed not to retaliate and said it was ready to negotiate, reporting that they would be willing to re-enter talks on their nuclear program. That's within the Washington Post. The Financial Times cast doubt on the White House claims the program has been obliterated. That's the nuclear program. Reporting they've been pushed into smaller secret facilities, which are harder to find. An Iranian insider tells the paper that the enriched uranium is untouched despite the U.S. attacks. The Guardian published satellite images of Iran's main nuclear facility in the days before the strikes, which says it appears to confirm that some material may have been preemptively removed. The iPaper focuses on the UK's response to the situation in the Middle East, pointing out the government has hardened its language against Iran, but the Sun highlights calls for the Prime Minister to get off the moral fence. The Daily Mail says his failure to publicly back the US strikes at the weekend puts him at a risk of being marginalised on the world stage. So whose side are you on, Sakir? Asks its headline. Times reports Home Office believes Iran could be funding through proxies the campaign group Palestine Action. Paper says the government officials are investigating the source of its donations because of concerns about where the group is raising the significant sums it requires for its legal costs. Palestine Action did not respond to a request for a comment. Now, those front pages from the top today. The top of my paper pile is the Daily Telegraph. Trump ceasefire agreed with Iran. Guardian, Iran attack on US air bases leaves Middle East on edge. The Times, Iran fires missiles at US bases in Middle East. Tehran unleashes missile assault on key military, American military base in Qatar. It's the Financial Times. So, whose side are you on, Sakir? Asked the Daily Mail. UK ready to defend our allies as Iran attacks American airbase. Daily Express, Trump, time for peace after Iran's very weak, his words, attack. War games. That's the Daily Mirror. Iran attacks US base in Qatar, but gives warning first. Topple the Ayatollahs. Israel and Trump target Iranian regime. That's the Metro. The Sun, taking us for a ride. This is a different story. Investigation into whether residents of migrant hotels are working as delivery riders. So boat illegals get food bike jobs within hours plus a free hotel room. Okay. And finally, the Daily Star, which says that holidaymakers are ditching the heat wave for a big chill. We're all going on our glummer holidays, and those for better or worse are your headlines on this Tuesday, 24th of June. Andres, you're desperate to come in with something.
No, I thought the subject of the day would have been the wedding of Jeff Bezos in Venice, but I see this all about Iran.
Well, no, you see, the thing is that I could just say about, you know, the Venetians rising up and expelling the multi-billionaire or whatever. Venice is not a bleeding theme park, but yes, we could come on to that a little bit later in this show. I'll go to a quick break, and then we're going to be talking, well, with both yourself and, of course, from his Venetian gondola, our very own Rex Leyland. That's coming up after this.
TRE. Your voice in Spain.
Hi, this is Giles Brown. On Thursday the 26th, 11:30, I'll be speaking to Rob and Christina from Spence Clark on my Let's Talk show all about the Spanish tax system. This month, the Spence Clark team will be discussing the new Social Security contribution system and the regularizations that have been made on your 2023 Social Security payments. And if you have a question that you want Rob or Christina to answer about tax, send it to them by email using the contact form at spenceclark.com, and they'll try and answer this on the show. Don't forget to tune in to Let's Talk this Thursday, the 26th at 11:30, so that Rob and Christina can help you demystify the Spanish tax system.
Viewpoint with Giles Brown.
Always live, always lively. Joined in the studio by Andres Gallardo.
Yes, I am here.
Yeah, you are here. And joining us from the Thames, from old Father Thames himself, our man in London, Rex Leyland. Rex, good morning to you.
Good morning, Giles. Good morning, Spain.
How is the woke finder general today?
The woke finder general today is a little despondent, as we've now returned to normal British summertime weather with a grey sky. No sun today till this evening.
Right.
Temperatures back to normal. Heat wave over. But they say, as the weatherman always says, there's more to come. So there's heat returning, like you, later in the week.
So are you?
I hear it's been stinking hot with you.
It's been stinking hot. I had to, because we do some prep before this show, don't we? And I had to show you a picture of my plan B, which was a rather lovely pool that I retired to.
Absolutely.
Which got to be done. Are you slicing the main brace then, and then batting down the hatches, Rex? That's what we want to know.
No, you don't splice the main brace until much later in the day.
Okay.
And the battening of the hatches, I don't think is necessary.
Right, fair enough.
Not just yet.
Okay.
And we've got no marauders.
No more
at the moment.
Well, yes,
no,
but
marauders.
If you want a maraud viewpoint, 952-78-4000.
We've got verbal marauders.
That's what we want on this show. 952-78-4000. Andres.
Yeah, Rex, I actually believe
Giles.
Good morning, Andres. Good morning, Rex. I actually believe Giles when he said you were in a gondola in Venice. As it happens, you're in London.
You weren't invited to the Bezos wedding then in Venice, Rex, this year.
No, sadly not. I couldn't make it anyway. I had a previous.
Well, that's good to know. Right then, let's have a look at some of the bits and pieces discussing. I've got a poll up, as we always do, on Talk Radio Europe, on Talk Radio Europe Official. I'm asking the following question with this one, which is, as you might have guessed, as following in the developments of the last week. And the problem is, you know, I went to bed with various things planned out. It's all changed. We get up in the morning. I'm asking the question on the poll. Was the US justified in targeting Iranian nuclear facilities? Yes, 57%. No, 42%. 1% don't know. So, should we kick off with that one, panel? Rex, your take on because it's moved so quickly, and then I woke up this morning and we appear to have a ceasefire, and I'm just going to open my news feeds and see if anything is that still holding. Off you go, Rex.
Well, it's funny you starting out with that one, because I was actually listening to the wireless yesterday,
right.
And there was it was LBC News actually. There was a clip from the forces minister who was being interviewed by Nick Ferrari, and it was reminiscent of the great Michael Howard interview with the chap from BBC Newsnight, when he asked the same question 32 times and yeah. never got an answer. Yesterday, they asked the forces minister from our current government, if we can call it that, and he asked it about 10 times. Were the US justified in bombing Iran? And he did not answer the question. And I was actually in the car screaming, answer the question. And he didn't answer the question, because obviously this is a sensitive matter, sensitive subject. And I think you've got to go back, Giles, to the beginning of, in my opinion, where it started. Actually, I'm not answering the question either. What justification does the rest of the world have in dictating to Iran, regardless of its politics, what they can and can't do? Now, when Pakistan became nuclear, and Israel became nuclear, and India became nuclear, all the other countries, was there the same brouhaha as there is with Iran? Now, we know the reasons why there is a brouhaha, or we think we know the reasons, but my point is, what gives the rest of the world the right to dictate? That's my response to your question.
Andreas, do you want to have a thought on what... Do we have the right to dictate to other powers, even if they have the potential to build nuclear bombs, which is the whole thing about this?
Yeah.
Should we be doing this, Andreas?
Okay, let's just put some facts on the table.
Yep.
Iran is a theocratic dictatorship, okay? You could say... well, that is their internal politics. That's the way they want it. Although it appears that a large section of the population are against the regime anyway. But okay, let's not get into that. And let's take the nuclear scenario out of the question just for a minute. The reality is that Iran's main aim, is the destruction of the state of Israel. Okay. The second point is that Iran over the years have been sponsoring logistically and financially, a number of terrorist organizations like Hamas, even before the, October the 7th, attacks. They've been sponsoring Hezbollah, financing Hezbollah, and cells around the world of terrorists. So are we right to go there? I think the time for diplomacy is finished. Something had to be done. They cannot carry on like that, inflicting terror everywhere, everything they touch. So are they right to bomb Iran? Look, you know, I don't want to see anyone bombing anyone or anywhere. But the reality is that diplomacy hasn't worked and something more drastic had to take place. Now, if we add to that, which is enough reason for justification for first Israel and then backed up by the United States, we have the situation with the nuclear development. Now, would you trust a state, a theocratic dictators, to have a nuclear bomb, the way they have behaving around the world? I mean, it's incredible how in the UK, I heard, you know, one of the ministers saying, we have to be on alert now because some sleeping cells of terrorists that live in the UK could be awakened by all these. Hello?
Yes, that is absolutely correct. Absolutely spot on.
So we have terrorists hanging around there, supported, financed logistically and everything else by Iran, and we just have to stand back and let them do? I'm sorry, no.
Rex.
Undoubtedly, what Andres has just said is totally correct. And we can't change that.
Yeah.
It is what it is. And unfortunately, it's that awful word religion getting in the way of how we conduct our lives.
Mm-hmm.
If you are from a different persuasion, a different culture, a different religion, you don't see the same way as others. And in this case, as you rightly and correctly indicated and said, that Iran is up to mischief with other situations, which of course lead to the fact that something had to be done.
Yeah.
Still doesn't answer my question, though. When Iran actually started, they were granted permission by two previous U.S. presidents and aided by two U.S. previous U.S. presidents to help develop their nuclear program. But this gentleman in power at the moment has said no and has put his actions where his words are.
Mm-hmm.
And has gone in and done something about it.
Just to,
go on.
I'm just thinking because the thing is, though, you can bomb the sites, and obviously when apparently nobody told sort of Hesketh about this, just in case he put in a WhatsApp group. So this was an entirely a sort of White House decision to go. He'd made the decision apparently on Wednesday. He had to move it forward because it's 18 hours to get from the bases with these B-2 stealth bombers. He'd made the decision and didn't, you know, they kept sort of like the Hesketh, the defense secretary, in the dark until the last moment. Same with Keir Starmer, I think, basically. He said, please don't use the Chagos Islands for this one. So you can bomb the sites, but it seems to be the International Nuclear Watchdog is saying there's been no sort of spike in radiation or whatever.
Yeah.
Because presumably this is how much nuclear material they got. They can put it in sort of like 12 cars or something. So they can move it. I'm going to go to the phone lines because we've got the first call of the day. Good morning, caller. What's your name? Where are you calling from? What's your viewpoint, please?
Morning, Giles. It's Alf.
Morning, Alf.
How are you?
Morning, Alf.
You know, hi, Rexy. Standing.
Hi, Alf. How are you?
Okay, you've been on a couple of times, but I just want to remind you, because you keep on slagging off the Labour government, but it was you that said a few weeks ago how wonderful it was when you had a Labour government because they were good for small businesses.
Yes,
eventually,
yes.
Eventually, this one will be as well.
I'm glad someone believes that.
Leopards never change their spots.
In the commercial world, you read what's going on. It is a bloodbath.
I agree. But
right then, we seem to avoid a bloodbath at the moment in Iran. So what?
Yeah.
I mean, your take on this? Come on, Alf. Let's hear your take. And Rex, please, because we're going to try and let's sort of have a you know, he says, she says sort of thing. So
absolutely. No, I'm just wanting to say because Rex always says rubbish stuff about the Labour Party, but he actually said how good they were for small businesses.
Right, now.
And how wonderful. Right, anyway, nevertheless, my take is, no, all throughout,
right,
every time. Okay, my take.
Yeah.
My take is that when they were threatening, when Trump was threatening to send in American planes, I was really concerned. The Middle East has always been, I think, the melting pot of where a world war could start, because after a while they become unconstructed, and I think that's where we are at the moment, because whilst the regime in Iran may have done a deal, because they're not in control of everything that happens. I mean, they're still firing missiles into Israel today because they don't control everything that goes on. But so that was the first. The second thing was when, and it always happens for us, it was about 3 o'clock in the morning, Trump sent the stealth bombers over to bomb the nuclear things, and you go, oh no. And literally, my wife and I, the following morning, the first thing we talk about is, Christ, this could lead to a world war. The fear factor for everybody was immense. And then Trump comes along and says, OK, we've done a peace deal. So again, what was it about, past two this morning, off it comes. There's a peace deal between Iran and Israel.
Yeah.
And you go, well, for how long? And always the sceptics will say that just allows Iran some more time to rebuild. You know, Zelensky, quite rightly, is saying if you do some sort of ceasefire with Russia, that just gives them more time to build up this new army that he's going to build up, which will be ready in 5 years' time to attack another part of the old Russian European Union state somewhere along the line. So, yeah, the fear factor hasn't gone. It might have diminished a little bit, but it's also these things like Rex. I mean, you've been around a long time like me. When have you ever expected either a minister or a prime minister or a chancellor or anybody speaking on behalf of the government, when have you ever expected them to answer a question put by a media person that they already know the answer to? They're wind-ups. Why would a minister answer a question just because he's asked 32 times? I don't care. Could be asked 322 times. The first time they ask you, they don't get an answer. Fair enough. Ask it a second time. Okay. The third time, it's getting boring now.
But the problem is, why didn't they answer? What is the reason?
What difference does that make? That's not the answer to your question. Why didn't the minister answer? Because he didn't want to. Okay, you can moan, you can complain, you can do whatever, but why would a professional media person have to ask 32 times before they say to the audience,
Michael Howard,
this person isn't going to answer the question?
Andrew, yeah.
I was going to call you Rex, Alf, sorry. This is why this more and more disengagement with politicians. Because when you get an interview with a politician, what you want is answers, so you can see the position of the politician, and you then make a decision whether you agree or disagree with that. And you take the stance of saying, okay, I like these people, I'm going to vote them. I don't like them because I don't agree with what they're saying, I'm going to vote someone else. If you don't get answers, you don't know where you stand. And for that reason, people disengage from politics. And you are an advocate of politics engagement, Alf. You've always been, you know.
Absolutely.
So they're not doing any favours to politics by behaving like they do when they are interviewed.
Yes, but Andreas, hang on, Rex. You don't conduct politics on the airwaves. You don't conduct politics in newspapers. You don't conduct politics You conduct politics in your parliament. If people can't be bothered to listen to what goes on in parliament and then make their mind up, then I'm sorry for them. But you're never going to get proper politics and proper what you'll have is discussions based on minimal stuff. If you watch Newsnight or whatever it's called, you know, where they have a panel of people, we'll ask this question of all these different people. None of them give a straight answer, and none of them ever give the same answer. So you don't conduct politics outside. You might conduct discussions where people may form opinions. And you're absolutely right, Andreas. If you don't enthuse people to get involved in politics, then politics will die a natural death. But isn't it? Isn't it already dying a natural death? Because people, it's not that they're fed up with politics, they're fed up with politicians who don't do what they think they've been asked to do.
What they've been elected to do.
Well, no politician is elected to do anything. No politician is elected to do anything other than represent their constituents.
Sorry, just very quickly. Politics is a public service. So you do have to explain to people what your positions are, and that's why they get interviewed. So they have a platform for them to explain what they're all about, so people can listen to it, whether they agree or disagree.
Yeah.
And the final say from the people is when they go and vote.
Absolutely.
What you cannot sit on the fence all the time. Look what the British government have done with the situation in Iran right now. Are they in favour? Well, no. Are they against? Well, no. Come on, guys, tell us what's the position of the government?
We don't know.
Exactly, Rex.
No, it's not that they don't know. It's just that they're not liable to say something because they don't know everything that's going on. Remember, Trump has kept this almost, they're now saying that even most of the American Senate and all that didn't know what was going on. So if they're keeping it to themselves, that's not about a public debate. That's about somebody making a decision and enacting it, and the rest of the world then can have an opinion on it. But I'll tell you what, you don't get to have an opinion on Trump for another 4 years. Well, 3 years or whatever his term of office is. That's when you, and that's the difficulty. Is people don't understand. Politics occurs in parliaments and at election times. The rest of it is just chit chat.
Can I just ask a quick question, Alf? Do you think that Starmer will have been breathing a sigh of relief that they didn't use the Diego Garcia as a base? He probably said, "Please don't drag us into that one as well."
Or worse still, Akrotiri. Akrotiri was more liable.
Exactly.
Not by the stealth bombers. I mean, I don't know. I was at the end of Bryce Norton Runway when they sent the bombers over to the Falklands.
Yeah.
And the fear that went, because everybody's going, "Oh, I wonder why all them bombers are going off." And literally, I was at the end of Bryce Norton Runway when Thatcher sent them off to the Falklands, and you go, "What's the first?" I mean, Argentina weren't capable of bombing the UK.
Yeah.
But when you look at what's going on now, and you go, so the Americans, and they don't have to even land these planes, do they? They can fill them up in the air, which is what they did. But if they land, you go, right, so, but you go, is RAF Akrotiri, which is a misnomer, because I think there are now more American people and American equipment in Akrotiri than there is from Britain.
Yeah.
And it's an RAF base. It's not an American base, but there's loads of, because it's so close to the Middle East.
Correct.
It's where they can do everything for Israel, never mind about bombing all the others. It's where they can get the cover to shoot down the missiles that are being fired at Israel. So, yes.
Yeah.
And what was it, 2 days ago they said that they'd foiled an attempt to attack Akrotiri.
Right,
and if you've had anybody, I mean, I had a cousin who was in Gan, which is in the Indian Ocean. But the fear factor of China doing something, these people were on high alert. I mean, they're just no. He was a fireman in the RAF on Gan, but the fear factor. So they're in bomb shelters for half the bloody time that they're on duty. It's like unbelievable.
Do you think that Trump should have discussed it or made it public, or do you think as a leader?
No, because if he had have done, the answer from this is a bit like the question that I always pose. If you went to the British public, no mind about anybody else, and said to them, "Do you think we should do away do you think we should reinstall hanging?"
Yeah.
I will guarantee you the answer overwhelmingly would be yes.
If not Boaty McBoatface, if you remember correctly.
Absolutely.
Or another question.
Or Brexit.
Should Britain leave the European Union?
Yes, we've been that one before. Just to bring up to speed, gentlemen, just in case you, because I've just been, this has been breaking, it appears, I'm getting reports in, that Israeli finance minister says Tehran will shake because Israel said it's detected missile launches from Iran. The far-right finance minister pointed a brief statement on social media. Tehran will shake. Iran has denied firing a missile at Israel in the past. That's in the past 10 minutes. Reports from Jerusalem saying that sirens are sounding over the north part of Israel, but Israel's promised any violation would see a forceful response on Iran. Tehran denying firing missiles. An uncertain and tense time for Israel at the moment.
Can I just add to this? Because I just had a message from a friend of mine in Haifa.
Yeah.
The sirens are going off and they just run to the safe place, a bunker or whatever it is. So it is happening. It just, the message came about three minutes ago.
But I don't know if this is under the control of the regime or whether it's individual military people taking it on their own, because their infrastructure is, when you bomb crap out of people's communications infrastructure, you lose control of what's going on. So if nobody's got the message, because remember it was, half past two last night here would have been what, about 4 o'clock in the morning in Iran?
Yeah.
And you just go, so, if they can't get messages around easy, and they're very wary, aren't they, about the communications, especially since the especially since they had all them bombs put into mobile phones where they killed all them people.
The pages thing.
Well, and communications is just so important that they don't use it. I mean, eventually they're going to go back to using flags and standing on top of mountains.
And remember, Iran is an absolutely huge country.
Absolutely.
So, it's so...
One of the biggest countries in the world, 90 million population. They're not going to run away from
Final
it.
Final question
but Andreas,
for you.
Just Andreas, one last thing is, you said the main aim of Iran is to destroy Israel, and of course it's not. It's never been the main aim of Iran.
Okay.
It's the main aim.
One of their aims.
We were doing so well.
We're talking about the regime.
The regime
may have that as an aim, but now it's because they don't have elections, because it's autocratic or whatever words they use. It's a dictatorship by committee.
Yeah.
Because they do that, there's no control over any of this stuff. So the main aim of Iran, and I listen to Richard a lot, I listen to Richard intensely because he knows such a lot about the Middle East countries. But you see, it's the difference between talking about the people of the country and the people in charge of the country. The regime have these things. Unfortunately, the great mass of people in Iran, I would imagine, don't want to see any. How many millions of people have fled from their cities because they're frightened of being bombed? So it's never true to say this country thinks this.
Did you know that it's illegal to own a dog in Iran because under the law of Islam, dogs are considered dirty?
Right, okay.
That's how bad things are.
Okay.
You can't have a dog.
What I was trying to say, Alf, is those people who could left the country,
and
the people who had the possibilities to leave the country.
Yeah, that's the rich.
There is a big, and I know this from good sources, because believe it or not, I'm well connected with Iranian people, There is a big base, I would say a majority base, of people who are against the regime. They are, because of a dictatorship, their voices are not heard, but they're there. And the biggest prison in Iran is a prison for dissidents. That tells you a story.
That's the ones the Americans have just bombed.
The Israelis bombed the door. It was a symbolic sign. Of saying, look, we can help you to remove this evil government and just to have a transition to a different kind of government.
I don't believe, by the way, in this regime change. There's never been such a thing as a regime change.
There has been. Alf.
You're talking to a Spanish person
who saw the change of regime. You can't change the regime to make it better. And the biggest example in the history of the world is Spain. I can't believe that you just said that. I mean, we went from a dictatorship to a democracy and becoming members of NATO, the European Union,
That wasn't a regime change. It was a regime change.
It was a regime change from an outside source. That's what we're saying.
Also, the word regime
refers to probably an unelected government rather than a democratically elected government.
The word regime is
so much incorrectly now.
Well, I mean,
dictatorship by any other name.
Where there is no democracy, it becomes a regime.
Right. Yeah. And also people would say, well, there was CIA-backed regime change with the British in Iran back in the 50s, and in our lifetime, perhaps in our living memory, 1973, and Allende in Chile. So
Rex's question was, do we have the right to tell Iran what to do? Hold on, Rex, I've got one question.
I would like to hear the answer, obviously.
Yeah.
Do you think it was correct that Iran bombed the US base inside their ally, Qatar?
If it was part of a game of chess that Trump and his people and Iran were playing in order to bring around this peace, then of course it was right.
They have to be seen to be doing something, don't they? That's
absolutely
the thing. I mean,
they
gave the Iranians. Well, let me just. I'm just going to go in here. Come in here. Just to. So they have to be seen to be doing something, the Iranians.
Yeah. Yeah.
They gave Qataris and the Americans plenty of notice. It was going to be a couple of missiles. Yeah. And that was that. It wasn't a terrorist attack on, you know, on an American warship. They haven't closed the Straits of Hormuz, right?
Absolutely.
Andres.
Yeah, I mean that was a clear example of how the media and information to the Iranian people is managed. It was hailed as a great success, the attack on Qatar, on the U.S. base in Qatar, from the Iranian government for their people. So it's just that was only to save face, because they couldn't be seen not to have done anything after all the attacks that they received. They've covered the tracks by saying, look,
Trump sent this message out to say, what a pile of rubbish, what a weak response, what a pile of junk. They're saying, it's called, if you're doing a deal, I said immediately that come up, I said to my missus, why can't Trump just keep his mouth shut?
Because he's Trump. Right. Can take a quick break in there, back with more.
Talk to you later, maybe.
Thank you, Alf.
Nice to talk to you, Bill.
Cheers.
Quick break and then back with more Viewpoint. Joined in the studio by Andres Goyard. Thank you, Richard, for letting me know. I know it's dead air. I didn't hear the stab, okay? Right then. 952-784-1000 is the phone number. Right, so, good morning to Richard. He has said the following. Morning, yes, indeed, with bells on. Donito is so desperate for the Nobel Peace Prize. Did you know that Pakistan had put him forward for the Nobel Peace Prize because of his actions with India and Pakistan, bringing that to a close? And then, of course, the strike on the nuclear facilities, and Pakistan have to backtrack on that one very quickly. Anyway, when is the Middle East not on edge? A better question would be, why can Israel and Iran have nuclear... No, why can Israel and the US have nuclear weapons and Iran can't, given that the US has used them before? This is an interesting viewpoint, and not necessarily one that Viewpoint shares, but Iran wants the destruction of Gaza, Israel is a nation run by a despot, and the US is a nation run by a narcissist. So that's an interesting point. Are you there, Rex, by the way, just to let you know? Rex, are you there? There you are, sorry. Rex?
Yeah, I'm here.
Thank you, sorry about that. News about missile attack by Iran on Israel after a ceasefire took effect is false, Iran's ISNA says. Meanwhile, the UN Rights Office has said the Israeli military must stop shooting at people trying to get food in Gaza, okay? The International Atomic Energy Association has said that it welcomes announcements on the Iran situation. Looking at other people, this is the dog thing, by the way. I thought this might happen. While there's no single explicit law in Iran prohibiting dog ownership, is effectively restricted and discouraged, particularly by in urban areas. Authorities often say public health is safe, etc., etc. I might as well call in saying it's illegal for tourists in boats on the Thames to exist. That's very nice indeed. There are regimes. I know, Rex, easy. There are regimes.
What boats on the Thames?
boats. Not gondolas. Don't worry. Not gondolas, Rex, or houseboats. So, yes.
But just going back, the point about the Iranians bombing the airbase in Qatar, which one of their closest allies. I mean, imagine something happening here in the UK, that Mildenhall, Fairford, Baconheath, all American bases were bombed by one of our allies. Imagine putting the shoe on the other foot. I mean, it's horrendous if you think about it. Absolutely horrendous.
952-784-1000 is the phone number. I'm just going to go to the poll we have running, which we're asking you, was the US justified in targeting Iranian nuclear facilities, if you want to get your vote there? Yes, 40%, no, 60%. That is where we're standing at the moment. Andres?
I wonder if in Iran they've got charts, music charts.
Number one would be who let the dogs out.
Good one.
Sorry,
that was my joke for the week. What's wrong with that, Giles?
There was I, like, you expected the voice of reason. Thanks for that. Right, 952784000. The phone number. However, you may bomb the sites, and you may bomb the sites, but the knowledge is still there. It doesn't matter, unless you start sort of electedly wiping out each and every... Sorry, Rex, you're dying to get in. I can feel it in the voice. Yes.
No, it's just that what was ironical, correct me if I'm wrong, I'm sure somebody will, that the sites were empty. The site was empty. They'd already had the heads up, and there was certainly nobody there to be killed, thank God. Including 40 British, I think, personnel, military personnel were on that base, but they were.
We're talking about the Qatari base, yeah?
Yeah.
For a minute, I thought you were talking about the Iranian nuclear facilities, and I was just.
No. I slipped back to that base thing. But but the thing is, it is actually a very difficult question to answer. Were the Americans correct in bombing the atomic facilities in Iran? It's I sympathize probably with that the forces minister in not answering the question. It's a tough one.
Sorry, Andrew.
Now we'll establish that whether you agree or disagree with the bombing. Now the next stage is to know the extent of the damage that has been done to Iran, first with the bombing from the Israeli Air Force, and then the American forces bombing the nuclear sites. We don't really know the extent of the damage. Obviously, Iran are not going to report it. They're not going to accept a team of observers from the United Nations to go in and have a look and report back. So that's not going to happen. So there is going to be a lot of guesswork, and it will take weeks, not all months, to find out whether they're still operational on that front or not.
And never mind the damage to the Qatari trading and day-to-day life. All the flights were cancelled, and the commercial damage to Qatar as a result of this. Remembering, of course, that they are, ours. It's a tricky one. Anyway.
If you want to get your point across, these are the numbers.
To contact TRE, please call 952-78-4000. Email studio@tre.radio. Send us a WhatsApp on +34 645 99 67 95. Message us on Facebook, Talk Radio Europe Official, or tweet us at TRE Talk Radio.
Now that this is a scene of confusion in a world where apparently you can drop, £1,000 or whatever precision bombs on a small target, we don't seem to be knowing what's going on over there at the moment, because the chief of the general staff of the IDF, the Israeli Defense Force, says the military respond with force in Israel to what it calls Iran's severe violation. In light of the severe violation of the ceasefire carried out by the Iranian regime, this is this morning, we will respond with force. That's Eyal Zamir, quoted as saying in a post on X by the IDF. As reported, Israel said it's detected missile launches from Iran. Iran state media has denied the accusation it fired a missile after the ceasefire. In the meantime, Iran's Supreme National Security Council has released a statement about imposing the halt of the war on Israel and its terrorist supporters. But they've said that any further aggression will be met by a decisive, firm, and timely response by Iran. So, it seems very strange that we seem to be able to pinpoint where nuclear things may or may not be. Where there's a strike, we don't know if it's happening. Nobody knows.
We knew that was going to happen. It happens with all ceasefires. Side said, "Oh, you didn't stop, but we did," and the other way around. And there's violations of the actual agreement, because forces on the ground sometimes could you know, for very operational, you know, decisions rather than what is in the agreement. That happens in all ceasefires.
Okay.
So it was expected that, that something like that will happen until it's settled. If the peace agreement or the ceasefire agreement is solid, it will settle within 24, 48 hours. At the moment, we've still got a little bit of, you know, not quite sure what they're doing.
If you go to the phone lines, morning caller, you're live on TRE. Well, you're calling from what's your viewpoint, please?
Good morning, it's Gil from...
Morning, Gil.
Yeah, something I don't understand, things that have been said on the panel and some of the listeners who debate why was it a problem to bomb Iran? You know, why can so many other countries have nuclear weapons and Iran not? I mean, to me, it's just a no-brainer, and I just don't understand, you know, how people can think otherwise. There are 9 countries in the world that have nuclear weapons. I think Iran is trying to be the 10th. I mean, you've got the 5 permanent members of the Security Council. They all have nuclear weapons. And then you've got Israel, but nobody knows officially. You've got Pakistan. You've got North Korea. And have I missed one?
India, perhaps.
Yeah. Yes, in India, sorry. Okay, so... Now, none of these countries are threatening other countries, okay? You can say that North Korea used to send rockets towards Japan into the sea. They were told to stop, and they stopped, okay? Russia is threatening from time to time to use the nuclear weapons in its war in Ukraine, but nobody's taking them seriously. Everybody supposed that it's just rhetoric and it doesn't mean anything, okay? But none of the other countries... are directly threatening another country, saying we're going to destroy country X, or we're going to start a war. You know, it is a little bit like, you know, when Hitler said, you know, I'm going to conquer all these countries. He gave a list. I remember Roosevelt asked him for insurances, you know, not to invade many countries, and Hitler made a joke out of it, and he said no assurances, you know, and he made a list of all these countries. Yeah, I mean, if a country says we're going to invade other countries, we're going to destroy other countries here, yeah, and they're producing nuclear bombs, I mean, why is it a no-brainer, you know, to take the threat seriously?
Gil?
Yeah.
It is clear to me that the least countries that they've got a nuclear bomb, the better. But of all of them that could have one, the worst one to have it is Iran. Yeah. Why? Yeah, because they sponsor terrorism, and so they're ruthless with life. Yeah. That means that if they were to have a nuclear bomb, could you trust them? I think the answer is clear. No, you can't trust them.
Exactly.
So it's better if they don't have it. This is factual. This is not just my opinion or whatever. This is what we got there. Do I want countries to have nuclear weapons? Of course not. What use do you have for a nuclear weapon other than destruction? So, of course, I don't want any. But if there are countries out there, I mean, I would like North Korea not to have it, because do you trust them? No, I don't trust them. But least of all, the ones that with a proven record of terror and evilness is Iran. Not Iranian people, don't get me wrong. The regime of Iran, the Ayatollahs.
Well, that's what I'm saying.
So I think that is clear. And when the Europeans have been claiming that, you know, we have to have room for diplomacy and everything else, we've had years of diplomacy. We've been talking about this for many years. And the time for diplomacy is finished. There's no more... You cannot give eternal time for diplomacy. There is, at some point... It's like with children, you know, you can tell them nicely a million times what to do, but if they don't do it, you have to move to the, you know, the next one, which is, you know, you're not having dessert. Not having dessert, you know, that's, you know, so more drastic action. And that's what's happened now. So when you say the panel have been, you know, wishy-washy with the situation, whether, the Iran... It has, but we haven't, nor Rex nor me. I think we've been very clear on our position there.
Yeah. Now, I think Rex said something about the British diplomat who didn't say things very clearly whether it was okay.
Yeah, the forces minister interview yesterday.
Pardon? Who was interviewed?
The forces minister.
The forces minister, yes.
Yeah, he was not. He should have. I mean, he's the man in charge of our forces.
Indeed. I hate to cut you all short, gentlemen, but the bongos are sounding, which means we are going into the international news. And we'll be back with more Viewpoint after the break. Gil, thanks for the call in.
Bye.
We'll be back with more Viewpoint after the break.
Discuss, challenge, inform, comment, Viewpoint on Talk Radio Europe.
Giles Brown.
Live comment and discussion with studio guests.
Viewpoint.
Always live, always lively. Welcome back to the second half of Viewpoint with me, Giles Brown. If you're with you for the next 55 minutes or so, just bringing up some breaking news at the moment. I'm joined in the studio by Andres Gallardo, and I will be speaking to Rex Leyland in a little while. Israel claiming that Iran has violated the ceasefire agreement. That's coming in at the moment. Meanwhile, this coming in on the WhatsApps, if you want to get your viewpoint heard, if you want to talk about something international, national, or even local, these are the numbers.
To contact TRE, please call 952-78-4000. Email studio at tre.radio. Send us a WhatsApp on +34 645 99 67 95. Message us on Facebook, Talk Radio Europe Official, or tweet us at TRE Talk Radio.
Joined in the studio by Andres Gallardo.
Oh, hello, hello.
And Rex Leyland, still there on the gondola.
Yep.
Marvellous. Yep. Okay, some bits and pieces coming in during our break. Israel, this is Claudia from there. Okay, good morning to you. Israel is widely believed to possess a nuclear arsenal with estimates ranging from 90 to 400 warheads. While the country maintains a policy of ambiguity and does not publicly acknowledge its nuclear weapons program, generally accepted the Israel has a nuclear capability, including the ability to deliver weapons by air, land and sea. What do you say about that? I think the Israeli government is more dangerous and they have no right to attack any other countries. I hate Netanyahu. He's evil. He must be stopped sooner than later. So no mucking around the bush there. Israel, Richard, it's very simple. How can one think otherwise? You can never trust the Israelis with a ceasefire negotiation. This is coming from Richard. They are doing what exactly happened in Beirut, massive bombing in Tehran just before the deadline. They then claim a breach when Tehran retaliates. Israel plans to destroy Gaza and has a nuclear weapon. Pot, kettle, black. So that's some points coming in through there. Russia's now saying it's going to have meetings with, calling a meeting with Iran, apparently. So we watch that one with interest. Go into the Facebook poll to see what you're thinking. If you're a shy, retiring type and just want to get your thing. Oh, Elizabeth, morning to Elizabeth in Brighton. She's come in on the Facebook page as well, saying hello there. Israel's been bombing where the nuclear scientists lived. Well, my thought on that one is, okay, so you can never, they may have moved out because the International Atomic Energy Association said they didn't see any spike in nuclear activity or radiation after the hit on the those three sites. They're saying that, so you could argue they've moved that, and maybe perhaps if they're going after the people themselves to eradicate knowledge of. I mean, the problem is, yes, sorry, Rex, you were saying
it's so clever to do that rather than to single out, pick out, cherry pick, whatever you want to say, individuals who are responsible for the terror or whatever.
There is a history of people of wiping out scientists that goes back to. I mean, they were wiping out. I mean, Mossad excellent record. Has a very good record in terms of, and I'm using that word advisedly. I'm not saying it's excellent. The Mossad are wiping out were in the 50s, for example, in Egypt, and they took out several sort of branches lot because they were helping develop rockets for Syria. Now,
it's funny you should say that, Giles. Okay. Very interrupting, because the other night I saw a program which I'd recorded about the use of the Nazi rocket engineers.
Oh, yes.
Who were tempted back to America.
Operation Paperclip Rex, it's called.
Yeah, it was a fabulous story, an incredible story. The Americans persuaded them to help them.
Don't get me started on Walter Van Brash, because, again, you know what rabbit hole I'll go down, and you know about my history about how much I enjoy banging on about the evil that was Nazis. Anyway, let's go back to current affairs. I want to come on something else about us, but we're asking the poll of polls, or this particular poll, excuse me, was the US justified in targeting the Iranian nuclear facilities? 36% are saying yes, 54% are saying no, 10% don't know. So looking forward to getting some more points on that one. Here's the thing, okay?
tell us, Giles.
What's the thing? I had a thing in the break.
What is the thing,
apart
Giles?
From the thing, which is the stab that, you know, that doesn't come up. Stab, by the way, that's a bit of radio jocks talk. It's a bit that goes, Giles Brown, and then you don't hear it, and that's why there's dead air, and then everybody gets involved. So, the regime change, okay? Iran, a regime change. Now, just let me have my little bit on this, gentlemen, and I'll let you come in. So, we have over the past couple of days, in my humble and I know nothing, you know, you may think I know F nothing, well, you're wrong, I know F all, but Netanyahu and the Israelis have been doing this bombing because they want to encourage the Iranian people to overthrow the government. You could argue that Iran has never been weaker, but conversely, you can argue that and I'd like to hear your thoughts, 9527 84000, on this, if you attack a country, doesn't matter if you're in, and it doesn't matter if you don't like the regime. For example, Rex, if the UK was suddenly attacked by some foreign force, as much as you wouldn't want to sit down for a cup of tea with Sir Keir Starmer, being a proud patriot, you would stand for your country, correct?
100%.
There we go. The gondola would be sailing forth. So, you know, and Iran is a vast country. There are so many ethnicities, but we use broad strokes in Iran. I think they're all sort of frothing at the mouth, mullahs, etc. But the Iranians, the Persians, the Kurds, or whoever in that area are the Kurds, but you know what I'm saying? They are all, you will be fighting proudly for your country. So if you want to unify a country against something, you just do an armed incursion. So whilst you may think it's a great idea to ask for regime change or try and get regime change, at the moment, Iran has never been weaker, so there could be a toppling, but at the same time, it's never been stronger. And also, as opposed to Israel, which has, and Andreas, you've been there, shelters, sirens, all that thing, Iran has none of these. The Iranian government does not care about its people, so therefore, they put a social. The only way that the citizens of Tehran are getting their news at the moment is pretty much through social media, and they even cut that off for 2 days. So, you know, that's just why they would prefer, you know, worst case scenario for the theocracy who runs Iran is basically an overthrow. So they, like, I mean, I've heard reports from an Iranian based journalist, an independent journalist, who was saying that basically the prison that they bombed, which is where the British Iranian woman was held for years. When it was bombed, they closed the clinic. So if you have been wounded, you are basically mucked because the Iranian government doesn't care about its people. So, and also, if you go for regime change, and it comes after the back of, I was watching a huge series on Vietnam and regime change there, you have to be very careful what you wish for, because as Iraq gave us, there was no plan. It's coplanary. And if you think that Iran would therefore become a Western-style democracy, and everybody would sort of link hands and sing "Kumbaya, my lord," whilst ordering a Coke and a Coke and a smile, then you're in for a rude awakening. Rex.
Same with Libya. You know, exactly. Regime change. The thing, just meandering off slightly, is that when the West starts promoting for regime change, sometimes it's not such a good idea. A lot of people say, in hindsight, that we should have left these Arab dictators running their countries because there was never really a threat to us. If you think, the threat was to their own people by these so-called dictators. And by removing them, And you could actually say the same about Russia, because had we opened our arms to Russia when they collapsed before Putin and welcomed them into the West, in hindsight, we should have done that, and we wouldn't have had a Putin, and we wouldn't have had an aggressive Russia. So sometimes, as we've already been mentioned, be careful what you wish for. And I do think that having dislodged these despotic leaders like Gaddafi and what's his name from Iraq?
Saddam Hussein, perhaps?
And Saddam Hussein, exactly. If we'd left them there, I say perhaps things would be calmer. That's my point.
I think that the difference with Iran is that the population of Iran, the majority are highly educated people. Of course, they're not Arabs. Let's not confuse that. As I say, they're highly educated people. There is what I hear from the people I know, because of course we don't have an official poll to say, do you agree with the regime? That doesn't exist. But what I hear is that there is a large, I would say, majority of people who are not happy with the regime. But the main reason why is that because, apart from being educated, Iran is a very wealthy country in natural resources. And when the revolution happened, the origin of the revolution was the redistribution of wealth, which was, they said, concentrated on the Shah's regime, and he wasn't getting to the population. So on the basis of that, a lot of people, the majority, supported the revolution, only for the wealth to change hands to new dictators, which are the ones that are still in power 50 years later. So the problem is that like any dictators, they run the country with an iron fist. Mm-hmm. I imagine there will be a pyramid of corruption where that keeps, the top in power and doesn't allow the majority of the people going about their business to sort of have a say. But if you had a chance to ask them, I think you will find the vast majority of Iranians will support a regime change, because they still remember, or the younger generations have heard about when Iran was a happy place, with wealth, with food, with music, with everything. You know, it was just like, you know,
the Paris. It was the Paris.
I remember in 1986, I used to work with an Iranian guy, and the mother was just a lovely lady.
Yeah.
And she used to make, for some reason, she used to make me food, Iranian food. You know,
Persians will always make you food.
She liked me. I don't know why, but she did.
I know.
And I remember sitting with her, having the food, and explaining what Iran was like. The Iran that she left behind. And a lot of people, I imagine, they will know about that, and they would want to return to that happy place rather than being under the thumb of these dictators.
For those of you who don't know, I mean, the English International College in Spain, in Marbella, which is in Rickmar, was founded by Jalal Harissian, who had fled in 79 from the thing. Yeah, so, I mean, well, I went to school, obviously, with an awful lot of people who had fled from the Ayatollahs, and you could argue that the problem was that the power vacuum that was in between the time between, because Khomeini came out of Paris so quickly that he filled the vacuum, and rather than having democratic elections like they promised, they killed all the opposition leaders.
But the key here would be to have the Revolutionary Guard supporting a regime change, because they're the ones who can. But that's not going to happen, because they're in the pocket of the regime.
Got a call on air, Rex. I'll let you come in a second, but just got to take this call. Morning, call, you're live on TRE. What's your name? Where are you calling from? What's your viewpoint, please?
Brian in Mallorca. Hi. Having spent a little time in Iran back in the 60s, it was a beautiful country, but I feel that everyone seems to be missing the point. My father, at the end of the war, was with the Eighth Army, and he was transferred to the Palestinian police. And one of his first jobs was to threaten an Israeli army officer who had entered Palestine and was trying to force people out of their own houses for himself and for his people. And the whole thing has been escalating ever since. I mean, Israel is the prime protagonist in all this bloody war, and it has been since they were given that bit of land that's now called Israel.
That's a congratulations on opening that particular can of worms, because I'm expecting a call in from Gil now any second now. But the thing is, the creation of the state of Israel obviously is somewhere, you know, for the displaced, you know, Jewish nation and Jewish religion to go after the horrors of the Holocaust. And Andres is waving, so he's going to save my proverbial for here. Andres, you're going to say something there? You're going to...
apart from the reasons of the creation of the state of Israel, which we all know, and I'm not going to go into that, I just invite everyone to look at a map of the region, to look at the size of Israel, and to look at the size of the Arab nations who don't want the state of Israel, the amount of population from one side and the other, and the constant threat that they have received since 1948 to today, is a country that's highly militarized because they are constantly defending themselves from existence. And because of the history that they've had, existence is the key source of their being. So that is not going to change. They're not going to change their mind. They've got their bit of land that they want to defend, and they want a Jewish state to avoid what happened in the 30s and 40s to ever happening again. So they have a safe place. And it's highly militarized because they're surrounded by enemies, constant enemies that they've had over the years.
Well, it's hardly surprising, is it? Because they're attacking and taking more of Palestine.
I mean, you
and have been every year.
You could say, look, there are things that you can criticize about Israel, and I can tell you, I personally don't like the settlement scenario that they've got in the West Bank, for instance. I've seen it, and I think the perception of a lot of people is that you have small urbanizations in the country. It's not. I mean, the town of Hebron, for instance, is split into two, just because some, you know, Jewish settlers wanted to settle there near a particular religious thing. I can't remember the name of the place. But I mean, that, when I saw it with my own eyes, I could criticize that. I didn't like it. I thought that was wrong. But in general, it's not. Their existence is based on defense, and it's been like this over the years. Of course, you can criticize things. The good thing about Israel is that if you go there and you don't like something, you can say it. Try to go to Iran and criticize Khamenei, and see what happens to you.
I think if I may add to this caller's opinions and concerns, is that you do have to go back to the Balfour Treaty, which was agreed that there would be a state of Israel or Zion. And you have to remember that if you're a Zionist, it doesn't matter what religion you are, because Israel is multi-religious and multicultural. But if you're a Zionist, you believe in the existence of the state of Israel. Nothing to do with Judaism or Islam or anything else. It is a free democracy.
You're missing the point completely here. You're missing the point. The fact is that Israel has been expanding by stealing land from Palestine for years.
Thank you.
And that is wrong.
Thank you for your call in. I've got more calls in coming, but thank you for your call in. Always good to have viewpoints. 952-78-4000 is the phone number. I've got some calls coming in. Of course, the moment that I go to those calls, I was going to say they all go quiet, but here we go again. Morning, caller, you're live on TRE. What's your name? Where are you calling from? What's your viewpoint, please?
It's Gil from Carlton.
Yes, Gil.
You said I'm going to call.
I did say you were going to call. As soon as somebody says 1948, state of thing, stealing land, I could put what little money I have down because you're going to call in. So, Gil.
Well, I'm going to correct knowing the history of the area. You see, he said his father was transferred to the Palestinian police, okay? Well, the Palestinian... Yeah, he said something like that.
Well, so, okay, he was in the 8th Army and then he went to Palestine.
And he became a policeman.
Yes, okay, he said his father was...
Okay. I can be wrong sometimes, you know, it's happened before and it'll happen again, right.
Okay, The Palestinian police, okay, which is part of the British army, yeah, that existed till the 14th of May 1948, okay? Afterwards, it was Israel. The two did not exist at the same time, okay? So there's no way the Palestinian police, you know, was doing anything about the Israelis because the Israelis didn't exist at the time, okay? What he meant, probably, okay, is that this was the period, okay, between December 47 and May 48, where the war already started, okay? But there was no Israel yet, okay? So there was no organization, yeah? People just fought on a sort of individual basis. And yes, there were cases of ethnic cleansing. That happens in every war. Okay, but I think that this thing is highly exaggerated by all the propaganda today. Most people just fled because they didn't want to be involved in the war, and they were afraid, you know, that they'll be caught up. So they just left, and according to their testimony, they thought they'll be able to come back after the war, which they couldn't. Okay, there was some ethnic cleansing, but it's highly exaggerated.
Okay, thank you. Thanks for that. Excuse me. Shouldn't be laughing. When you said a little bit of light ethnic cleansing. I mean, that's, you know, it's a bit uncomfortable in that corner. Let's just.
It does happen. It happens in every war. I'm not denying it. Okay, yeah. And if the Israelis don't deny under the certain place there was ethnic cleansing, okay, this happens in every war. When five countries invaded Israel in 1948, yeah, there was no time to plan and think what is the correct thing to do, okay?
Yeah.
These things happen, you know. The country didn't exist. There was no authority. They didn't know what to do. Actually, Ben-Gurion, who was prime minister, you know, at the beginning, when they started to run away, he said to the Arabs, don't run away. We have our Declaration of Independence. We said minorities will be protected. There's no reason to run away. Okay, but afterwards, when he saw that his calls fell on deaf ears, you know, the other people said to him, well, don't worry, you know, they'll run away. Be less problems for us.
Yeah. More calls coming in, but Gil, thank you very much, and good to hear from you as always. 952-1084-1000. Morning, caller, you're live on TRE. What's your name? Where are you calling from? What's your viewpoint, please?
Hi, good morning, Giles. This is Richard in Puerto Lanús.
Good morning, Richard. How are you doing?
What's up? I've just been listening to your panelists, and there's a couple of points I thought might be of interest. The first one about the dogs in Iran.
Yeah.
There is no law that says you can't have dogs. In fact, there are millions of pets. People have pets all over the place. There is a thing, especially with the Sunni Islam rather than the Shia Islam, where animals are viewed as being unclean. But there is no. This was something I brought out of the British newspapers. It is totally untrue. The other thing that I find quite interesting is, you know, your panelists are talking about the barbaric acts of, you know, Iran and this and the other. At the same time that we have this controlled starvation of the Gazans, I don't think you've actually sort of mentioned Gaza your whole thing.
Yeah, I was trying to keep away from Gaza
because it defies all this credence about Israel being, you know, land of milk and honey, being nice people and being always the ones who are the victims. It is, you know, I think it's a little bit of a mistake not to do that. Then the next thing I would like to say is that Israel maintaining ceasefires or keeping ceasefires has about the same batting average as Trump with deals.
Right.
Trump has not managed a deal. Israel always is the first one to abuse the ceasefire.
I just got a quizzical eyebrow and then an earthy reply from Andreas. But you know, the more cynical would say this is you know, any small missile coming over from Iran, and it gives the green light for the IDF to just pile in there again.
But you look at the Lebanese ceasefire, you look at the Hezbollah ceasefire, you look at Hamas ceasefire. It's always Israel that it's the ones who finds a reason not to honor any ceasefire. The other thing about it is about someone mentioned that all the news in Iran comes from state radio or state television, etc. That's actually not true. There is satellite television going around. People have VPNs that they can connect to the outside world.
Right.
In fact, the US and Israel are sending quite a lot of programs, especially with the son of the Shah of Iran, about regime change and everything like that. So again, that statement is factually incorrect.
Richard, do you think that Iran is? Because I said it earlier, because listening to the news agents podcast last night about Iranian journalists who had to leave. She's a journalist based obviously in London, and she's saying Iran has never been stronger in terms of stronger of support for the regime because of what's happening, but also weakest because of obviously this is Israel is saying or Netanyahu is saying. Rise up, people of Iran, and there are so many groups.
He says it in English. He says it in English. It's like when he did a message to the Lebanese.
Yeah.
And he said it in English. Now, if you want to speak to the Lebanese, you either say it in Arabic or you say it in French. You don't say it. The only people who really would be listening to Netanyahu speaking in English are the diaspora, the Iranian diaspora, shall we say, the people who are not in Iran itself. And, they happen to be quite vociferous on their anti-regime status. But I do know from the people in Iran that there is a tremendous support of the government at the moment. Yes, they would like to have a lot of things changed, absolutely, but that's true for many governments. The other thing that also you guys mentioned, I think Andreas mentioned, about the good old days of the Shah. Well, I think a lot of Iranians would say, we remember the Savak. The Israeli and, the secret Mossad police, and CIA-trained secret police.
Yeah.
They weren't that happy times. If you said something against the Shah, and also with the redistribution of wealth, one of the things the Shah tried to do was take land away, similar to Spain, land away from the landowners and redistribute it amongst the people. And that absolutely failed. So he actually tried to do that as well. Then you talk about pyramid of corruption in Iran. I mean, come on. Have you seen Spain? Have you seen the United States? Have you seen Israel? Have you seen Netanyahu with the Qatar gate and everything else? What's going on there? So,
happens elsewhere doesn't mean that doesn't happen in Iran.
Of course, it happens in Iran. It happens everywhere in the world.
You can't have the argument and say,
"Oh, you're doing more."
Even in Norway, where I have to be doing a lot of work,
right.
Even in Norway, there is that. So it's always there. The other thing about Balfour, what you have to remember about Balfour, he was a evangelical Christian, and he also was a huge anti-Semite. All right. And in those times, the European elite, they did not want to have a Jewish problem on their doorstep.
Yeah.
And the final thing, the other thing that also came across was this, was it Gil or whatever his name is?
Yes, Gil, yes.
You always get ethnic cleansing in every type of war. What a load of rubbish. The main ethnic cleansing we've seen, the last big one we saw was, for example, with the Armenians and the Turks. You have that maybe with the Hutus and Tutsis. Now you're seeing it in Gaza.
Richard, so the Balkans. It happens in a lot of wars.
It's not. Yeah, but the guy who called in says in every war you have ethnic cleansing. At the moment, ethnic cleansing is going on is Gaza.
Right.
So that's all I really wanted to say about that. Although there are a couple of other points I would like to
Richard,
put forward. Cheers, guys.
Good to hear from you as always. Gonna take a quick break and then back with more Viewpoint.
Viewpoint with Giles Brown.
Always live, always lively. Joined in the studio by Andres Gallardo and in London by our woke finder general, Rex Leyland. To the lines we go. Morning, caller. You're live on TRE. What's your name? Where are you calling from? What's your viewpoint, please?
It's Gil from Calpega.
Gil!
about
light ethnic cleansing, I think, has set the world alight, hasn't it? So
Absolutely. Yeah. Well, Richard is wrong on the fact Balfour was not an anti-Semite. But Richard is. That's the difference, okay? He believes all the wrong is to do with Israel. Whatever Israel does, that is wrong. Okay?
Right, okay.
Okay, now...
Let's try and not make it too personal, hey? Because, get it. I get it. It makes it a little more uncomfortable. You say somebody like, I'm a Trotskyist, Richard is whatever, you are whatever. Let's try and keep it sort of on the thing, yeah?
Yes, okay. Okay, now... he said that usually it was Israel that violated the ceasefires. It's not true, okay? I can go through a lot of history, okay? It wasn't true in the Six-Day War. It wasn't true in the 1973 War. It was true in the Suez Crisis, yeah? Okay, but on the whole, Israel violated ceasefires a few times. But, of course, a ceasefire is a ceasefire. It's just to stop shooting. It's a technicality. It's not like a peace agreement. It's not like Holland invading
Belgium, you know, when the two countries have an agreed border and there's a peace treaty between them.
Right.
It's just a ceasefire, not more. Now, as for ethnic cleansing, I want to say that ethnic cleansing wasn't viewed very negatively till about 1950s.
Right.
Okay. Another thing is, ethnic cleansing is not against international law, because the term ethnic cleansing came from the war in Yugoslavia, if you remember.
Yeah.
Beforehand, nobody used that term. And most of these treaties were written before the war in Yugoslavia. So ethnic cleansing literally is not against international law, but there are things which is similar with other kinds of words.
Displacement of people, refugees, etc.?
Yeah, displacement. Okay, yeah. Now, if you look at history, you know, when Ataturk decided to do this population exchange between Greece and Turkey, nobody said, oh, how terrible, this is ethnic cleansing, you know, and so on, you know. It was accepted as a way to stop a long conflict. Another example, when Lord Mountbatten and Lady Edwina went to India and decided to separate, you know, the Muslims and the Indian and Pakistani.
That was
ethnic cleansing, right? Yeah. Nobody said in those days, oh, how terrible, this is ethnic cleansing, this is a bar. No, everybody thought it was a good idea, including the Indians and the Pakistanis who followed it, yes?
Okay.
So nobody thought of it so negative as ethnic. Another example for ethnic cleansing, the biggest ethnic cleansing in history, was after World War II, all the Germans who lived in what used to be East Prussia, East Brandenburg, Upper Silesia, Pomerania, you know, they were ethnic cleansed, okay, from an area which they lived in for many, many years, and there was no threat after the war. Stalin decided he wanted to ethnically cleanse them, and
correct.
Churchill knew about it and agreed.
Correct.
Yes. So in those days, it was considered a good solution. I mean, they didn't want, you know, Poland always wanted an exit to the sea in Gdansk, yeah, and Germany wanted to unite its two parts, and that's what caused, you know, World War II. If you remember, Danzig was a free city and all that.
Yeah.
Okay, so ethnic cleansing was not viewed.
Right.
Okay, now, ethnic cleansing is usually the term means when, or refugees are usually talked when people move from one country to another.
Well,
okay, if they move inside the same country, it's called internally displaced people. Okay,
right.
Which is what's happened in Gaza. They're not moved from Gaza to another place. They're moved within Gaza. Okay, from one area to the other.
Right.
And the reason why they're moved is to help them so civilians won't get caught in the war, you know. Israel wants now, okay, to do a big attack on Gaza City, which is in the north of the Gaza Strip, okay? So it tells the people, look, move out, move to the south, so we can come in, and those who don't want to take part in the war will not be there and will not be hit, okay?
Right.
This is to save their lives. This is not, you know, because, well, first, they don't have any houses to live in anywhere, yeah, in northern Gaza and southern Gaza, okay? So they say to them, look, move from where you are to another place because we're going to bomb this place, okay?
Yeah, you could mark, yeah, this, listen, there's, Gil, yeah, I get where you're coming from with that. You can argue that there's not an awful lot of place to move to. There's not an awful lot of Gaza standing, and we've gone through that whole situation at the moment. I don't want to go down the Gaza route today, because we've always got next week to go through that, because I'm sure that's not going to be cleared up in a week. Because I've got to get another break in now before the end of a Viewpoint, and I'll get some more phone calls in. But thank you for your call in there.
Okay, thank you.
952-68-4000 is the phone number. studio@tre.radio is the email if you want to get involved. Looking at the poll at the moment, is the US justified in targeting Iranian nuclear facilities? Yes, 39%. No, 53%. Don't know. 8% if you want to get involved. Some more breaking news. Attack on US military base, nothing to do with Qatar. That's what the Iranian foreign ministry spokesman said, that yesterday's attack on the US-run Al Udeid military base was nothing to do with Qatar. Ismail Baki said Iran's actions were an act of self-defense. Iran remains fully committed to its good neighborlessness policy.
But why would he say that, Giles? It's nothing to do with Qatar.
Because they just don't want to upset the Qataris, because they've got quite good relations with them.
You know, sorry. Allies.
Exactly. So sorry about that. But you did have to have the great Satan's base on your land, quote unquote.
Yes.
You know,
yes.
Of course, we are, UK is a little Satan. That goes all the way back, of course, to the overthrow and the reinstatement of the Shah.
Yes,
go on.
I shall lighten the conversation.
Well, you? I'm just got somebody said they're devoid of words at the moment, so that's always good to know. If only more of us were. Here you go. Go on.
I would like to lighten the situation
yes.
By telling you
a tiny story. Where okay. Years ago, when I was working at the London Playboy Club, which I did for...
Hang on a second. How have we gone from...
Because you'll wait. I'm going to tell you.
You were at the London Playboy Club.
I worked for 5 years at the London Playboy Club as a manager. And other...
It's quite interesting.
Hold on, let me stop the press.
I want to listen to this.
We are very, very, very sorry, listeners, because there is breaking news. And Ritson, I hope you're listening, because you have a chance to change your entire script, because I've just been hit with a bombshell that Rex Leyland, work finder general, worked at the Playboy Club for five years.
London.
Managing and not as a bunny girl, I hope.
No, I did bunny selection, though. I did do that.
Let's move. And you, that's where you are the world.
But can I come to my point? My point is, I said I'd like the story, the program. I was, we had a lot of overseas members, particularly from the Middle East, from the Arab world, and so on. And the Shah's brother was a friend of mine, and he always was a great tipper. So I used to receive tips from the brother of the Shah of Iran, who actually used to stay. We had accommodation over the club, and you could, it's like was run like
a
hotel, and he had an apartment there. But remember, the casino was the pull. That was the attraction, because they were all gamblers.
Yes.
And they just loved to gamble. But it was absolutely true. And I got to know him quite well. And of course, a really lovely chap. And in a way, I think today, if I'm wrong, the prince is speaking in Paris today. Is that right?
I've no idea, Rox. I'm still in shock by everything you said, which is so politically not correct. It's outstanding. Can I go to the lines, please? Thank you. Come on, quickly, Rex.
No, there's going to be a big... he's making a speech today, isn't it? The Shah's son.
Right, okay. Yes, he is indeed. Good thinking, yes.
And we're going to hear something.
We are indeed. To the lines we go. Morning, Cool, you're live on TRA. What's your name? Where are you calling from? What's your viewpoint, please?
Hello, Charles Felix.
Hello, Felix.
Hello. Trying to get in for a long time.
The phones have been very busy. My apologies. You can probably get
a long time. How many lines have you got? One, just one line?
Well, unfortunately, when we have a situation like this, we do have a very limited number of lines.
Okay. My main interest, as you probably know, is the Middle East, Starmer, Ukraine, and global warming. And the problem with today's discussion is very simple. People are cutting across each other and they are telling lies. For example, this comment that was made by Richard that Lord Balfour was an anti-Semite. This was the biggest lie probably that's ever been told. So let me just deal with this to show what I mean by what's going on here. Lord Balfour was a Christian, a confirmed Christian, and he was a Zionist Christian.
Right.
He believed that the Jews should return to the old land of Israel and set up their state there. And he was very confirmed in that, and he loved the Jews. It was part of the Christian philosophy. That part of it, he did have a love for the Jews, and this was his interest. Another one was Lloyd George, the same kind of thing. But to say that he was an anti-Semite is just such a horrible distortion of history.
Right.
This is going on all the time now, and there is great hatred put up in the West toward the Jewish people.
Right.
And this is going to be a big problem. Now, I have just a small suggestion to make that people, before they come on, do some reading. And I would suggest that everybody coming on to speak on this program has at least read one book. And there is one that will be accessible to all, which is called Khomeini's Ghost by Con Coughlin. ex-telegraph writer. I repeat that word.
Khomeini's ghost.
Khomeini's ghost. That's it. Khomeini's ghost. Everybody read that book, and at least we will have a basis for some truthful discussion. Thanks, Charles.
Felix, thank you for your call in. Sorry I had to wait. Going to take a break and then back with more Viewpoint.
Viewpoint on Talk Radio Europe with Giles Brown.
Always live, always lively. Into the last 10 minutes, joined by Eric Slayl in London and Andres Guardia in the studio. San Juan.
I'm just wondering if what happened in Qatar last night was a celebration of San Juan.
Some rogue Spaniard.
Some rogue Spaniard.
Letting off a large firework.
Yeah, that could be. That, which takes me to... I'm changing the subject for you.
We're getting off the last 10 minutes, or the last minute, 9 and 15.
Because while this is happening in the world, and we've been discussing all the issues of geopolitics... In Spain itself, we've been focusing on what's happened with the government and the corruption charges that have been sprouting all around the Prime Minister.
Now you can
just to give you an idea of the level that we are at in terms of court cases. I'm saying that live court cases. So the evidence has been presented to a judge, and the judge has admitted the evidence as there could be something, and they go to trial. We've got involved here the Prime Minister's wife, the Prime Minister's brother, the Prime Minister's appointed general attorney or chief prosecutor. I'm not quite sure how you translate that, but I think it's the chief prosecutor appointed by the Prime Minister. We've got the former transport minister and number two of the structure of the Socialist Party. His most close collaborator to the transfer minister and the Socialist Party chairman, if you like. And finally, once the corruption with these two was discovered, the Prime Minister appointed a new guy to run the party, who's also now being charged by the court on corruption. So that's what we've got here in Spain. But my question is to everyone out there, knowing what we now know about all these corruption charges and the fact that they are, you know, being tried in the High Court, Supreme Court, and the fact that the country hasn't had a budget approved for the last 2 years, so we are using the last approved budget 3 years ago, taking into account that we've gone through inflationary times where defence spending has had to be reviewed, so on and so forth. Do you think out there that the Prime Minister should resign? That's my question.
Do you think, Rex, that having heard, because I just said good Lord coming from the from the poop deck. Go on.
I'm deeply shocked to hear what Andres just said. I'm afraid... I have to admit that as I'm based in the UK, I'm not following Spanish politics. But when I'm in Spain, I always read the local English newspapers, and I do try to immerse myself in Spanish politics. But if what Andres has just said is true, it's quite frightening, really, in a democracy like Spain, that there is all these shenanigans going on. It doesn't strike confidence in any way, shape, or form.
Here's the thing, Rex. I mean, one of your favourite many watering holes on this particular part of the world is the Acero Guadalmina, and I went past.
Yes.
Indeed. And I went past the other day, and they were putting up new signs, because if you don't know, the owner of Acero Guadalmina.
Yes, I know him.
I know.
Yeah, well, I mean, to be honest, that is pathetic, because now the criticism is coming from inside the party.
Right.
Because we got to the point where this has become ridiculous. I mean, the tapes that they've been discovered by the Guardia Civil talking about how they're going to sort of get the money and what percentage gets to who and the amounts of money. They're talking the 700,000 for you, the 620 for you, and all of that. Then the prostitution a situation that they had with the transport minister.
I'm sorry?
Where he was ordering prostitutes almost like a catalogue to go to their meetings when they were outside Madrid. The fact that one of the girls was employed but never went to work, getting a public salary and an apartment paid for just because he had...
When we say one of these girls who was a lady of negotiable...
There's several...
of negotiable virtue.
The last one we found out last week was a girl who's still active as an escort and porn actress, that he was in the payroll of this guy, who was the closest collaborator of the Prime Minister.
But this is the PSOE.
The Feminist Party.
Sorry, Rex, I'm sorry my voice has got a couple of octaves here, because traditionally I would expect the PP to be that.
I would need a week to explain everything that has been going on, but there is no sign of Pedro Sanchez saying, look, I've got it wrong, I haven't managed... The best way of saying, look, I haven't been able to manage all these people...
That's surprising.
But a lot of people in Spain, the majority of people in Spain, the question that they're asking to themselves, in view of what they've got in front of them, is how did he not know? And if he knew... How he's got the face to still be there, and if he didn't know, how incompetent you are to carry on being a prime minister.
But, Rex, I'll let you come in a second. This has always been the same in Spanish politics. No matter it's alcaldes or Junta. Who can forget the cocaine chauffeur in Junta Andalucía?
We've had them all. Exactly. We've had them all. That's why I said, now, blip.
The thoughts just struck me, Rex, on this one. You know, if they're ordering ladies of negotiable virtue and etc., they need a man who could run this. And obviously, as not saying that you are totally above board.
No,
somebody used to
like
dealing
that.
With young ladies, ladies in states of relative undress. I think we could resurrect your career there that you joined in the 70s
it,
in
it
London.
It was tough going to work in the mid 70s, in the early 70s.
Well, the oil crisis,
It was very tough, but they were actually the happiest times, and it wasn't like a big family, and there was no hanky panky, there was no ladies of the night. It was all above board.
But just listening to your reaction there, I mean, you can complain, and we do, about Starmer and dithering, and where you grow up.
I don't know how you put up with it in Spain. I don't know how you put up with it.
How do you put up with it
and
in Spain?
When's the next election? When's the next election? In
2 years. The Prime Minister said, I'm going to run the time down to the 2 years. So there won't be an election.
Is he in a coalition?
Of course.
He's in a coalition. But the interesting thing is the political parties that sustain Sanchez in power, they've so much to lose if he goes keep supporting him. But I mean, you've got a case like this girl. I mean, I'm going to focus on one because there's so many, Rex. This girl who was having this relationship with him, she got a... With the transport minister,
right, thank you.
Who was the number two of the party and the closest collaborator of the Prime Minister, Sanchez.
Well, he always liked a free ride, obviously.
Oh, Rex!
Yeah. he had an apartment paid by this corruption of €2,800 a month. On top of that, he got her a job... in a public body, I think it was okay, one of the companies.
1 minute left, by the way, address.
The run state,
1 minute.
She had a salary paid by the taxpayer, and when the judge asked her, where do you work? And she said, I don't know, I've never been there.
Okay.
And can we accept that? Is that acceptable?
That's just...
Nobody phones about this.
We know now. Rex, I think... Well, come with the hour, Rex.
Yeah, I think when you just say nobody phones about it, I would probably assume that most of the listeners, expats, whatever, are not really too immersed in Spanish politics, but rather enjoy the beauty and the hospitality and the marvels of your wonderful country, Spain.
And that is why you are the work fighter, Gerald. Just quickly at the end, the poll said, was the US justified in targeting Iranian nuclear facilities? Yes, 51%. No, 43%. So in favour, yeah, don't knows, 6%. It's been a great viewpoint. My thanks to my guest, work fighter general Rex Leyland.
It's a pleasure, as always, Giles.
We'll see you soon. Take care. And Andres Gallardo.
Rex, enjoy Bess's wedding in Venice.
Right, this program will be repeated at 7 o'clock. Stephen Ritson is up next. Have a great Tuesday.
Views expressed on Viewpoint by invited studio guests and callers do not constitute an opinion endorsed in any way by Talk Radio Europe.
You've been listening to a TRE production. If you've enjoyed this program, there'll be another episode waiting for you next week, right here on this platform, where you can also access our extensive back catalogue of shows and interviews. For more information on our live programming, social media channels and apps, and how to contact Talk Radio Europe, please visit tre.radio.
At Ability Chiropractic, they do things differently. They believe lasting health starts with understanding how your body truly works, not masking pain with quick fixes. Their doctors take time to educate and empower you to take control of your wellness journey. Through gentle, customized adjustments, they help you restore proper function and unlock your body's natural healing power. That's why Columbus families have trusted Ability Chiropractic since 2012. See the difference for yourself. Book your appointment today at abilitychiro.com.